afternoon. Thanks for coming back and listen so soon. Bring in the stories of everyday folks while you sit back, relax, have a whisk, coach. Here we go with the Trend Speak podcast, bringing you insight or bringing a laugh. Here's the man who might have a plan. Give it up for your host, Trent Pod Scaland.
It's always fun to talk to a variety of guests, you know, from singer-songwriters to magicians to authors to entrepreneurs. Really, you know, Jesse talked about it last week. We've had a variety of people, a diverse group of people here on this podcast. And while I'm continuing to work on something for the 100th episode here in the next 10 weeks, I'm really excited to bring you this week's guest, who is also another entrepreneur. But she's got a great story to share with you this week. Now, keep in mind that these interviews have been done over Zoom lately, and so technology is an issue sometimes. So you may hear her, unfortunately, cut out a couple times throughout the interview, but it was just too good to not share with you. You know, even listening back to the interview before I published the podcast, her energy is just so infectious. Her energy, her just the tone of her voice and everything, you can tell she was passionate about, she is and was passionate about what she was doing and what she is doing, continuing to have that impact. So I'm really excited for you to listen to Audrey, and I hope you're as captivated by what she has to say as I am. Today I'm talking to Audrey, who is an entrepreneur. Audrey, welcome into the Trent Speaks podcast.
Thank you so much, Trent, for having me.
Yeah, of course. So Audrey, let's just hop right into it. I know that I've kind of done a little bit of research and everything, and we kind of exchanged a little bit back and forth before the podcast. I know that you've been an entrepreneur for over 20 years. Sometimes I like to just start out with a nice broad question. What's your story? How have you gotten to where you are today?
Oh my God. So, you know, I actually started like in 1997, and I was working at Prudential Insurance Company, and they decided to move their company further south. I was in New Jersey at the time. And so they decided to move the company further south Jersey, which was far from me. It was about a 45 minute to an hour ride for me. So I didn't want to go that far. So I started looking around, and I remember looking at, so this is when they had newspapers, like really, I started looking in the classified ads for a job. And I saw this advertisement that said, you know, you can be your own business, you know, sell this perfume, and, you know, you sell so many bottles, we'll put you in a store. Now I love perfume, love it. And so I was like, oh my God, I can have my own selling perfume. So I was really excited about that. And so I went to this meeting. When I got to the meeting, Trent, it was in February. So February in Jersey is really cold, probably kind of like Wisconsin, really cold. And I remember going to this meeting, and the guy was there. He had on some white pants. He had on like some these little loafer shoes, no socks, had a long ponytail. He was really tanned, and it was February. And I'm looking at this guy. I felt like I was in an episode of Miami Vice. And I'm looking at him, and I'm thinking, wow, this guy is really tan. But what was even crazier was that inside the building, there was money hanging from the ceiling. And so all the people that walked in with me, it was about 40 of us that walked into that room. It was just money hanging from the ceiling. So everybody was like, oh my God, what is this about? And so he went on to explain us that they were a perfume company, and that, you know, once you sold so many bottles of perfume, you could open up a perfume store in your area. And so everybody was all excited. And I was so excited about that. I did that for 3 months. From February to April, I walked around New Jersey in the cold, in the snow, in the rain, spraying perfume on people, just spraying people. And people felt sorry for me. So they would pay $20 for a bottle of perfume. And I was excited. But what happened was, just being out like that, even though it was freezing cold, just being out, it felt so freeing, right? I wasn't making any money. The $1 a bottle. Like, we would sell the bottle for $20, I would make a dollar. And so felt so free. Like, I had never felt like that before. And I was like, man, I kinda like this thing. So, And I kept moving forward with that. I did that for 3 months. And then I realized I got this kid. I can't keep doing that. I have to get a real job. So I went back to work and I got a real job. And I hated that job. And I would go to work every day. And I was like, oh, my God, I hate this job. And I got sick. And I had to have emergency gallbladder surgery. So while I was out recuperating, you know, it gave me time to think about what I wanted to do. And in that time, my one of my best friends, she was pregnant and she was about to go out on maternity leave. And she said, hey, do you think you can fill in for me while I go have this baby? And I was like, sure. So she was working at Novartis Pharmaceuticals. And so I went to go work at Novartis for 6 months. And I that was boring. I hated that. But while I was there, I had this idea for this doll. And I remember, you know, thinking, man, why did God give me this idea for a plus size fashion doll? It was like crazy. And so she came back to me, started working at Verizon. And I had really good job strength. I'm not going to even lie. People thought I was crazy to give up my jobs because I had really, really good jobs. And I hated every one of them. But I started working at Verizon. And I remember having this idea for this doll. And I told one of my good friends, I was like, you know, idea for this plus size fashion doll. Have you ever seen this is what my exact words are. Have you ever seen a fat fashion doll? And she said, no. And I was like, yeah, I got this idea. So she said, well, come by my house. I go by her house like later that day. Trent, I get to her house and she had just purchased a doll for $250.
Oh my gosh.
That's what I said. Hey, you spend $250 on a doll? She's like, yeah, I collect dolls. The doll was beautiful. It was by Mattel. It was a black doll. It had like short hair. It was beautiful. It came in a black box. It was gloss. It was beautiful. I was like, $250 for a doll? I said, oh my God, we're going to be rich. That's what I said to her. And so she said, I just want to know, can I be the vice president? And I was like, yep. And so we hit the ground running, Trent. I call that my first real business because I had sold Avon before, but I didn't know that was a business. I thought I was just selling Avon because I never made any money because I would spend all my money back in Avon. So I didn't call that a business. I call that a real hobby. I call my dog company a real business because I knew nothing about the industry. I had to learn everything about the industry. And God gave me this idea for this doll. And I was working at Verizon at the time. Verizon went on strike that year. And when went on strike, I never went back. And people were like, are you crazy? You're going to leave your job? I was like, I'm going to leave my job and follow my dreams. And I never went back to Verizon. So Georgette and I hit the ground running, trying to figure out how to get this doll in my head, out of my head into a real doll. And so we spent all summer in New York, in the subways, going from this place to that place to this place to that place, trying to figure out how to get the doll made. And she went into I want to say she went into FAO Schwartz. I don't think FAO Schwartz is still available anymore, but she went into FAO Schwartz and she saw a doll box. And on the side of the doll box was a company in Maryland. And she said, I think I got somebody that can help us. And we called the guy. And sure enough, he told us to come to Maryland. We drove to Maryland, 3 hours away from Jersey. And we spent 8 hours in his doll warehouse with him. And he told us everything we needed to do. All we had was water for like 8 hours. It was like constantly just writing, writing, wow, writing. And we drove back to Jersey. We were like on some kind of supernatural high. We drove back to Jersey. And that's how we started with the doll company from that guy. His name was Percy Newsom. His company was called Integrity Toys. And he helped us get started with that whole doll thing.
That's insane. And I do actually remember I'm still old enough to remember like FAO Schwartz and when that was still a thing. So I do remember those stores. That's crazy. So where is the company at today?
So we started the company in 1999. We got our first shipment of doc. Now let me tell you this crazy story before. So we started the company, right? We didn't have a website. So I had to learn how to build websites. I had to learn how to do PR. I had to learn everything. We had to learn how to raise money. We had to learn everything because we didn't know. We had never been that type of entrepreneur. Like we had been in like, you know, Avon and, you know, Primerica, but we had never been like in a management type of situation. And so we had to learn everything. So I learned how to build websites. I learned how to do PR. We built the website, Trent. We got the the guy Percy, he told us about a sculptor that was in Kinchlow, Michigan. And he said, this is a sculptor that I use to sculpt my doll. So what we did was I sent a picture of me. I was a lot heavier than I am right now. But I sent her a picture of me. And then I sent her a picture off the internet. I said, listen, we need the doll to look like this. I can't send you a naked picture of myself. So I'm going to send you a naked picture off the internet. We need the doll to look like this. So she looked at me. She looked at it, and she sculpted out a doll. And she sent us back the clay. And when we got the clay back now, it's kind of like somebody who has an ugly baby. Like, oh my God, it's so beautiful. It was our beautiful ugly baby, right? But it was like, it was clay. And we were like, that's amazing. So we were able to send back some changes, like change this, change that. She changed those changes. And then she sent us back the wax. And then we took the wax and we sent the wax to Hong Kong to a manufacturer. Manufactured by going to Toy Fair. So Toy Fair is this humongous industry event that's held every year in February at Javits Center in New York. We went there and someone pointed us in the direction of a toy manufacturer, and they became our manufacturer. And they have been the manufacturer for the last 21 years. And so we sent the wax to Hong Kong. Hong Kong sent us back some prototypes. We approved the prototypes and we were in business. So we thought. We took the TV, we took the doll. That's one we got on TV, right? In Texas on Fox TV, Insight. The show is called Insight. We want Fox. We got all of these orders, ton of orders, right? And crashed the system. And then we could not get the dolls made because we didn't have enough money. We had to refund mostly all of the money. It was crazy. Wow. So that was crazy. So we ran a company for 5 years, doing doll show up and down the East Coast, any kind of doll show, any kind of toy show we did that for 5 years. And then Georgette, who was my partner, she and her husband moved to Texas and I stayed in Jersey. And after 5 years, I was completely burned out, like just burned out. Didn't want to see another doll, didn't want to see another show, didn't want to see a highway, didn't want to see anything. So I kind of took a break from doing a doll company in 2005. And I became a consultant with Rutgers University Small Business Development Center. And I started helping people launch their own business at that point.
Oh, that's awesome. What was the most challenging part for you? Because like you said, you had to learn everything from scratch. What would you say was the most challenging part throughout that process for you?
I think the most challenging part was not knowing the industry, because we were really new in that industry. Like, there was no industry. There was no market for a plus size fashion doll. And so we spent a year on Wall Street trying to raise money. Like, we would have these meetings with people and they would say to us, oh, that's a great idea, but there's no market for that. And we were like, yeah, of course there is. We're going to start a market. And it's like, that's ambitious. They would laugh at us. That's ambitious. But yeah, we can't invest in that. So I think trying to get people to understand that there was a market for the dolls was really frustrating for us and challenging, and not having the money to do all the things we really wanted to. Because even after we ran a company for 5 years, we ran out of money. I ran out of energy and we ran out of money. So that was the capital to support the business and the growth was probably the most challenging.
So what was the motivating factor for you? Because I know you said like you had this idea and you didn't really like any of the jobs you were doing, but this idea popped into your head. You kind of just talked about how it was hard to pitch this idea of like, no, there is going to be a market for this at some point. So what was it that motivated you to keep going and push through all of the negative and stuff that people would say to you?
You know, I didn't know any better. I can tell you right now, 20 something years later, I know too much. And that could be detrimental to a lot of entrepreneurs. When you don't know a lot, you're more hungrier. Like you want to get it done. You want to see it happen. We wanted to see that happen. We didn't know. Now it's like, if I try to start something now, I know so much till I'll stop myself. Back then, I didn't know enough to stop myself. I knew that I had this idea. I knew that I had spoken to somebody who had started a doll company. I knew that I could actually get something made in Hong Kong. I knew these things. So it was like, I knew I could get it done. And that was my motivation. And then I thought I was going to be rich. I ain't going to lie. I thought I was going to be rich. Like, when my friend told me she spent $250 for a doll, I just knew I was going to be rich. And I was like, this is it. This is the one. I'm going to be rich. So partly motivation and partly just not knowing that I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
You know, just believing that I could.
No, that's awesome. That's awesome. That's really cool that you were able to keep yourself motivated enough to keep driving forward to to make your dream come true, basically, to make your idea come true. Because I think you're right. A lot of people stop. And I don't know what it is that everyone has their own reason for why they stop. But I think it's important to make sure that you are driving through to see what it is that you want to see to the end.
Yep. It's really important. I think a lot of times when you're in this game for so long, you know so much till you stop yourself. Like today, if I wanted to launch something, I get a lot of great ideas. I could want to launch something, but because I know so much, I'll stop myself. Like, that's not gonna fly. You know, some of that is good wisdom, some of it is just like not good wisdom. You know what I'm saying? So back then we didn't know. We didn't know that it couldn't be done. We just knew that I had this idea and Georgia was like, let's make it happen. We just ran. Like we stayed up. Like I remember I used to work so much on this business. I took a paper route, slinging papers, like the newspaper, like a kid. Like I took a paper route slinging paper because I needed to make some money. And so at 3 o'clock in the morning, I would get up and I would go to, the town was called Orange, New Jersey. It was the paper depot where everybody who slung papers would go pick up their papers. And then I would go to a town called Livingston, New Jersey. And I would take my flashlight and I would shine and make sure I threw the paper to the right house. They thought I had lost my mind, Trent. They was like, she has lost her mind. They was like, you left Verizon to go take a paper route? And I was like, yeah. So I would always say to them, at least you get the Sunday's paper for free because I sling papers. But, you know, I was that dedicated. I remember my daughter was around second or third grade at the time. And I had a teacher saying, you know, she needed to have a teacher's meeting with me. So I go to the meeting. And I said to her, you know, what's going on? And she said, well, your daughter's grade is slipping, you know, and we just wanted to let you know that they were slipping. And I was like, well, why? She said, well, she said you work all the time. Ooh, you talking about feeling like a bad parent? I felt like the worst parent in the world. I cried all day like a little kid, like, oh, my God, I'm such a horrible parent, you know. But what I did was after I cried all day, I said, okay, you got to make an adjustment. You have to figure out how to work with this kid and do this business. So what I would do is when my daughter went to bed at night, which is around 8 o'clock at night, I would start working and I would work until about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And then I would go to sleep and then I would get up at 7 o'clock and take her to school. And then I would come and I would work from the time I came back till the time she got out, which was around 3 o'clock. And then I would spend time with her till she went to bed and I would all over again. I did that every single day for like 2 years, every single day. And so, but that's what you have to do. You have to make adjustments along the way.
Well, and it feels like you took a big risk. What did that feel like? Because you quit your jobs in order to pursue your goal, basically. So what did that risk feel like?
At first, it didn't feel like anything. It felt like I was following my dreams. When reality kicked in, it was very scary. I remember waking up in the middle of the night because I didn't have money to pay my car note. And I remember every time I would hear a noise outside my house, I would think they was coming to repossess my truck. And so reality kicked in that, oh my God, you quit your job. You have this kid, you have bills to pay. It was crazy. It was very scary. But I was determined not to fall behind. I was determined to keep going. And so what happened was, I went full steam ahead. Like I was like, I got to make this happen because I can't go back to work, you know? And I remember doing shows. I remember making doll clothes with fabric glue in a hotel because we had a big doll show. And so we had drove to like North Carolina from Jersey, which was about a 12-hour drive. We went inside and this was my husband. He was my boyfriend at the time because my partner was living in Texas. So we went into the fabric store, we bought some fabric glue, some fabric, and we made these clothes with fabric glue because we had this big doll show. And I remember being so sleepy and so tired, but we sold a lot of dolls. And so I came back and it felt good. I thought, okay, that was a great show. And I did that constantly over and over and over again, but it was scary, you know, because I had a daughter. My daughter at the time was about 8 years old. So I had this kid, you know, and I'm trying to like manage rent. And so if you've never lived in Jersey, Jersey is very expensive if you live in a good area, which is where I lived. I lived in the suburbs, so it was really expensive. And but there were nights where I would not sleep because I just thought they were going to come and repossess my Jeep because I hadn't paid the bill because every dime I would get, I would put it into the business. I didn't have credit cards because I went to college and I had credit card debt. So I filed bankruptcy when I was 24. So my credit was shot. So I didn't have credit cards. I just had whatever money paper route, and I had the support of my mom and my brother and my uncle. And so they kind of supported me through the whole thing, but it was very scary. I mean, and I wouldn't tell anybody to do that. I wouldn't say quit your job unless you got money saved up, which I did not have. Do not quit your job. Do your thing as a part-time gig. Do not do that, because that was very stressful. But I made it through.
Well, and then you started a podcast back in 2009, you had said. And then you started a new one in 2018, you said?
So what happened was, when the doll company was out, there was a, I went to go make some copies at a print shop, because it was a big article that came out in this magazine called Today's Black Woman, which is a national magazine. And someone had said to me, I saw you in the magazine. I'm like, what magazine was it? And they said, it's the one with Taye Diggs on the front. I'm like, what? So it was midnight in Jersey. The person was in California. It was midnight. So my boyfriend and I jumped out of the bed. We went to the 24-hour grocery store, and there, sure enough, on the newsstand was a magazine with Taye Diggs on the front. And when you open it up, they had did a really nice story with us, and we were on one side of the magazine and Kelly Price was on the other side. We was like, oh my God, we're in the same magazine with Kelly Price. And so I took that magazine into a print shop to get some copies made. And when I went into the print shop, the guy who owned the print shop was starting a newspaper. And I said to him, you got any writing about entrepreneurship? And he said, no, would you like to write about it? And I was like, yeah. So I started writing about entrepreneurship in his newspaper he was just about to launch. Then he asked me, would I be the associate editor for the newspaper? And I was like, yeah. And so I started doing that. And about 2 years later, I decided to launch my own newspaper. It was called Women in Business Today. And then there's a guy, he picked my newspaper up and he asked me, would I be on his radio show with him? And I said, sure. So he had a Saturday morning radio show on regular traditional radio. He had me on as a guest. He liked me so much, he asked me, would I co-host a show with him? I was like, yeah. So I started to be his co-host on the show. And I co-hosted the show with him for a year. And I fell in love with the whole radio thing. And so my husband, by that time we had gotten married, and his job had lost one of the patents to one of the drugs that they make. And we moved to North Carolina. And so when I moved to North Carolina, I was like, you know what? I wonder, can I do that radio show as a TV show in North Carolina? And I kind of just walked into like the TV station, a local TV station. I pitched my show to them and they loved it. And I was on TV. It was crazy. They put me on TV to do the same show that I was doing in Jersey on radio. And we were in the country too, Trent. Like, we were literally in the country. Like, we moved from the city to the country. But I did that show for 2 years. And then we got tired of being in the country. We moved back to Jersey. When I moved back to Jersey, I went back to regular radio at another station. And I did that for another 2 years. And right around that time, podcasting was just kicking off. And so when I stopped doing regular radio, I started doing podcasting. So my first podcast was 2009. I did about 200 episodes of that show that I would do every Tuesday morning where I interview entrepreneurs. And then after that, I was like, man, you can't make on this thing. Like, I need to make some money. So there was no money at that time. So I started being a consultant for Rutgers University, then Keene University, all working for the Small Business Development Center at those universities, and was helping people start their business. And then 2013, I moved to Georgia. And I had to start all over again. Like, okay, what am I going to do here in Georgia? And so I launched a internet TV network. And a lot of people don't even know that they could do this. So here I am again, starting into something I had no clue about. But I started an internet TV network called HerTube. And I ran HerTube. HerTube is 7 years old. This year. And so people can watch it on Roku and they can watch it on Fire Stick. So I did that for like 5 years. And then I launched my in 2015, and nobody still wasn't making any real money yet, right? Until Pat Flynn and John Lee Dumas started making like millions of dollars. And I'm like, holy crap, you can make some money now. So I got back in the game in 2018, and I thought about going into politics first. I was like, well, you know, I need to know my community. Maybe I'll go into politics. And I went to a political meeting and we spent the whole day, about 3 hours, trying to figure out where to put a comma in a sentence. And I was like, yeah, this is not going to be it. I can't. No, I'm not signing up for this. So I decided to launch a podcast. So my podcast, Good Morning Gwinnett, was born December 2018. So that's how I got to back into the podcasting space. And I'm loving it.
Well, and you had told me that you you have a coffee after one of your podcasts, correct?
Yeah. So what happened was, you know, as podcasters, we're always looking at ways to try to monetize our podcast. So of course I had, so, you know, everybody do it, they do it a little different. My show is a local show. It talks about my local community. Like Gwinnett is the county in which I live. And it's a vibrant community. It's about almost 1 million people in the county. Wow. And so I was like, well, I'm going to do this show. And I have t-shirts and I have advertising. I have all these different things, but I was like, I want to do something that's different. And I was sitting in my office one day and I was like, maybe I need to launch a beer. So my first thing was to launch a beer, right? Maybe I launch a beer. And I was like, nah, I can't launch a beer. It's breakfast. I said, maybe I launch a tea because I love tea. And I was like, nah, but everybody don't drink tea. And I said, but I love coffee. I'm going to launch a coffee. And I thought about it. So I named the coffee Good Morning Gwinnett Sunrise. And the coffee is butter rum. And so crazy, Trent, like week before last, I'm sitting here, I'm doing the show, right? Because I just launched it. I recently just launched it. I'm doing the show. And I look at my phone and the PayPal thing comes through, right? And I'm like, $7.95. Like, what do I have on my website that's $7.95? Because I couldn't think of what was on my website that was $7.95. I'm like, $7.95? And I'm looking. So then I open up my PayPal account and I see this woman's name. I'm like, well, I don't know who she is. And so I'm looking at the name, don't recognize the name. And then I hit another thing to open it up further to look at the order. And someone had ordered the coffee. And I'm like, so right at that time, I was playing a song on my podcast. So I was on a break playing a song. And I'm like, holy crap, somebody ordered the coffee. So she ordered a sample packet of coffee. I was ecstatic. So I went on that episode when the music stopped playing. I was like, I'm so excited. Someone just ordered the coffee. But yeah, I have a coffee and it's butter rum flavored coffee. And I gave some to my mom. I said, taste the coffee. Which she's like, oh, I love it. It tastes delicious. I'm like, okay. I don't even drink coffee. That's the crazy part.
That is really crazy that you don't drink coffee. See, I would have thought that you would have drank it.
I drink tea. I love tea. I'm a tea junkie, but I think people like coffee more.
Butter rum does sound like a very good flavor. I will say that.
Yeah, my mom loves it. She says it's delicious. I was like, okay.
So if people wanted to support you and get the coffee, how would they get the coffee?
They can go to goodmorninggwinnett.com. That's GWINNETT.com, Gwinnett. That's perfect. The website.
Yeah, that... I might actually go get some right after we're done recording. It sounds really good.
It's a, you know, when you're thinking about how to monetize your podcast, I think you have to be a little bit creative. Because my thinking was, my rationale for starting the coffee was, well, I could wait till a brand sees my numbers and, you know, say, hey, I want to advertise on your show, or I could just build my own brand. I don't know if you ever heard the story of Procter & Gamble, how they started the soap operas. You ever heard that story?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so soap operas became the soap operas because Procter & Gamble had Ivory soap and they needed a way to sell the soap. And so they decided to start doing these soap operas so they can sell the Ivory soap. That's how we got operas. And I thought about that and I said, well, you know, if Procter & Gamble did soap operas to sell the Ivory soap, well, heck, let me do some coffee, you know, to push my podcast out there. Yeah. And so because you know, a lot of times we want people to advertise on our show, but the first thing they say to you is, how many listeners do you have? How many downloads do you have? You know, and you're looking like, man, I just started this show. I still need to make money. And so I was like, I don't want to be that person. I want to be able to monetize my show without having to, you know, go. And then I don't know if you know it or not, but you go to these companies we're going to get you some advertising. And you see your advertising dollars like pennies. Like I get advertising money from Spreaker. It's enough to buy me a cheeseburger at McDonald's. It's crazy. And so it's like, I can't wait for that. I have to build a brand around my show. I have to make my show a brand. So to me, launching the coffee just made sense. And, you know, it makes for good PR, if nothing else. You know, it gets you written up and talked about in different circles and in the media and things like that. So, you know, you have to be a little bit creative when you're trying to figure out how to monetize your show because it's so much now. When I started, it was on like a few thousand. I spoke at PodFest this year. I spoke at She Podcast last year. When I spoke at She Podcast, it was 775,000 podcasts.
Wow.
March, let's fast forward from September to March of 2020, it was 950,000 podcasts. From last year in September to March, we had jumped like 125,000 podcasts. Wow. And so the industry is growing now. And with Joe Rogan, who just signed his $100 million deal with Spotify, I'm sure everybody and their mama trying to get a podcast right now, you know, because it's like, holy crap. Not only can you make money, you can make hundreds of millions because that's what Joe just did. So, you know, I just wanted to figure out how to monetize in a way that I felt good about and not really try to focus on, you know, having a big brand coming. Now, would I like a big brand? Yes, but they need to be coming with some dollars. But I also need to see me having 10,000 downloads an episode. I don't have that. My show is really local. So I was like, I can't wait for that. I have to do something that's going to monetize the show.
Yeah. And so kind of talking about building your own brand, when I was doing some research before we were recording and everything, I came across your ABK Media Group. Talk to me about that website. What is the purpose of that website and how did that all come about?
So with ABK Media Group, what happened was, remember I said I launched a TV network called HerTube. I learned how smart TV apps. So smart TV apps are just like the apps that you have on your phone, except they're for your TV, like your Fire Stick and your Roku, your Apple TV. Those are smart TV apps. So I wanted to launch this company. I did not have the money because smart TV apps cost anywhere from $5,000 to $10,000 an app, just like a mobile app. And so I didn't have the money to do that. So I learned how to do it myself. And I decided, well, you know what? I might as well turn this into a business now that I know how to do it. And, you know, and so I started building apps for other people. But I did not like that. It was so much headache for me. I was like, oh my God, this is just, it's too stressful. And I did it though. I built a bunch of apps for different people so they can have a channel on their Fire TV stick and things like that. But I wasn't loving it. You know what I mean? And so for me, you know, you're a baby. You're not a baby. I went and saw you. You're a young man, right? I'm an old lady. So for me at this stage of my life, I want to enjoy my life. I don't want to be stressed out to the max. So I launched BK to build apps for people, smart TV apps. And I was doing that. And I just found that it was so stressful and it was so much work and it was such headache and people don't get you the content back. It's kind of like building a website for people, you know? I was like, I don't want to do that. Not like that. So what I did was I partnered with a young lady in Atlanta. She does the exact same thing. She was new. She was hot. She was loving it. So we partnered. So what I said, I was like, well, you know what? You want to do that? I don't want to do that. So now when I have a client who needs a smart TV app, I refer them to her. Fast forward to 2019, I launched Noise Media. Noise Media is all about podcasting and voice marketing. That I love because I love podcasting. I love being able to show people how to get their podcast on Alexa. And I love being able to show people how to launch a podcast and get their voice and the message heard. So I have a dual company right now. I have ABK on one side and Noise on the other side, but Noise is my baby. Someone comes to me, they need a smart TV app, send them to my partner who does that now.
Audrey, so what would you say has been the most impactful like moment or event in your life?
Outside of having my daughter and my granddaughter, the most impactful in marriage, those are obviously impactful. I've had so many. I think for me, it has probably been the doll because that's a physical product. And if I kick the bucket today, that's my legacy. Like that is still here. It'll still be here on earth. You know, internet TV, if they decide to do away with it, it'll be gone. Nobody will remember it. But if you notice books don't go anywhere. Like you, people are collecting books, dolls, people collect dolls. So I think just everything I learned about the doll company, the whole manufacturing process, and just being able to take something from my head and like a doll and put it into a product that people can hold in their hands. I think that has been really impactful for me. I always go back to that story because for me, that's where it really all began. And so it has been the basis of everything I've done up until now, because I remember the drive I had when I started that company. And when I fall off and I'm feeling sorry for myself and I'm in a slump, I have to go back to that drive because I do, you know, I want things to happen so quick and right now. You know, so I have to go back to where I started and say, you know what? I have to pull from there. You had to stay focused here. You got to stay focused now. So inventing the doll has probably been the most impactful thing in my life.
What is it that you want people to take away or to learn from this podcast when they listen to it? What do you want people to take away from you?
Don't chase money. Do not chase money. Follow your dream, and you really have to believe in yourself. Like, that's really important. You have to be patient. A lot of times we want money. We kind of disguise it as, well, I want to start this business because, and really what's behind it is the fact that you want money. Now, I'm not saying that you don't want to make money, because we need money to survive. What I'm saying is, do not chase money. Do not start something for the wrong thing, because at the end of the day, even if you make money, you're not going to be happy. They tell you right now, some of the richest people in the world are some of the most miserable people. That's the truth. That is really the truth. I know rich people that are just unhappy. So I would say, follow your dream, get through. You know, when times get difficult, people who can lift you up. That's really important, because if you are an entrepreneur, you're going to have the moments where you want to throw up your hand and say, what did I do this for? What was I thinking? Right? That's when you want to go to your circle and say, hey, listen, I'm feeling some kind of way, and let them lift you up. And it's okay to ask for help. You have to be able to ask for help, and you have to be able to be honest with somebody. A lot of times family and friends don't understand this journey that you're on. They want you to get a job. My brother used to say, my brother is very conservative. He was like, ooh, you should get a job. Even though he supported me, he's like, girl, you crazy. You should get a job. They don't understand. So get around people who understand you. Join the Chamber of Commerce. Join a local association. But you got to be around the people who understand the journey, because that's going to be really important to your success. Find you a coach. Find you a mentor. Stay connected with those people and follow the dream. Do not chase the money. I can't say that enough. I'm not saying don't make money. Don't chase money.
Well, Audrey, really well said. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today. Nice little fun thing that I like to do at the end of the podcast. I like to let the guests take over. So I'm going to let you take over and do the sign off for your own podcast.
Hey guys, listen, thank you so much for listening to Trent Speaks. I am so happy I have been a guest today. Trent, thank you so much for having me. Listen, make sure to subscribe to the show and share the show with your friends. And he'll be back again with another great episode with another great entrepreneur. Until next time, make it a great day. Thanks, Trent.